This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Arvind Yuvaraj
and Majida Hashim.
So yesterday we had a story about a particular Google employee who was running his mouth and talking a whole bunch about how some women do not belong in the Google. How do we put it? In the workplace, essentially. He basically said that, right?
That they can't be engineers or something.
Right.
Not good enough for tech jobs or things like that.
Let's not mince our words. Alphabet then, Google, Alphabet Incorporated, Google, have fired an employee who wrote an internal memo blasting the web company's diversity policies, which created a firestorm, as we know, across Silicon Valley and over here in Malaysia as well.
Oh, yeah.
The engineer has confirmed his dismissal in an email saying that he had been fired for, quote, perpetuating gender stereotypes. A Google representative didn't immediately return a request for comment by the newspaper. And also Sundar Pichai, who's Google's CEO, has said that portions of the employee's memo violate our code of conduct and cross the line by advancing harmful gender stereotypes in our workplace.
Nice.
Step in the right direction then.
Yeah.
Okay, enough about that. Let's move on. Stories we've got lined up for you today include investment in a local company here, smartphones and teens, animal identifying, which should be interesting, a healing device and pilotless planes, which Majida will be touching on in a little while. First off then, Arvind, I know you're a big fan of all things flicks.
All flicks,
Netflix, iFlix. Mm-hmm. Here we are with an iFlix story. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so we normally speak about Netflix a lot on the show.
I mean,
what they're doing, like content creation and stuff. But this is a story about something more local. Malaysia's iFlix has raised about $133 million in its latest funding round.
US dollars.
US dollars. That is led by US diversified media and information and services company called Hearst. So that brings the total investments to date in the video on demand service to $303 million, which is a huge amount, and it's pretty good.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. 133 in one round is huge. So investors in this round of funding include the Singapore-based EDBI, and then they're also clients of DBS Private Bank. That's what iFlix said. And they already have shareholders from Evolution Media, from Sky Private Limited, from the Catcher Group, Liberty Global, and a bunch of others. So iFlix, I mean, basically was launched in 2015. And so far now they are part of, I think they're part of Catcher Media. iFlix is under them, right? They say that this new funding will allow them to expand on their local content strategy and also expand their technology and development teams so that they can continue to rapidly evolve an iFlix service to meet the unique challenges of emerging markets.
I do know that the UK broadcaster Sky also became an iFlix investor in this round as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to look at this. I mean, we've spoken at length about how and why Netflix are so popular and are doing so well, you know, and a lot of that comes down to them being incredibly aggressive in the regions that they move into, including Southeast Asia, and the amount of money that they are investing in original content. Is this something we're likely to see, do you think, coming out of iFlix with this amount of investment?
I mean, if they can get more investments like this and if they can focus on making their own content, that's when I think they will, like, they can become as huge as they want to be. I subscribe for iFlix way before Netflix got in here, because back then you couldn't subscribe for Netflix unless you had certain ways. But iFlix has an expanding catalog. That's one thing I've seen. And they have a lot of TV shows that are not available on Netflix and on Astro. So they have like exclusive TV shows that they bring in, and it's licensed only to Netflix, which is pretty nice.
Right.
I think the moment they start making their own content, and if they can rival content that is created by other content creators locally, then they will become pretty huge.
I know recently they've invested in some of the local comedians as well. They've started putting out, I know there's a local comedy show that goes out with some of the guys that we used to interview here and performing on it. So that's nice to see. But they just don't have the budget, I'd assume, as Netflix do, right, Majida?
Yeah, but it's interesting because the iFlix service has already been rolled out to 19 markets around Asia, Middle East, and Africa. And it's great to see how these kind of investments will allow them to expand even further, maybe even give Netflix a run for their money.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, I mean, we can speak about budgets, but then if you look at some like YouTube content, it doesn't take a lot.
That's
They shoot their stuff on iPhones and all. So if iFlix could focus on maybe short-form media or, you know, like skits, maybe 15-minute episodes, yeah. stuff yeah. that will get people hooked and tuned into,
yeah.
then maybe they can be going somewhere. Maybe not copy Netflix or exactly what they're doing, but then something on a smaller budget. Netflix just made its first acquisition today, actually. They bought, like, Millerworld. It's a comic book company. They are
really?
The guy, yeah, they are the guys behind Kingsman and Wanted and Kick-Ass and stuff like that. So what Netflix is doing is now they're acquiring other companies that have content, and they're going to pull them and, you know, adapt those content for them.
That's
for the
interesting.
Platform. Yeah.
Right. Okay, moving on to a story that I found fascinating today. It's picked up from the Atlantic,
mm-hmm.
And the title of the article is Have Smartphones Destroyed a Generation? So this was then picked up by a bunch of other media outlets.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as we know, the smartphone ushered in... it changed the way in the way in which we look at the world and how we interact with it, right? Not only with the technology that we use, but the way in which we interact with one another. Now, while there's no shortage of examples as to illustrate how the smartphone has improved our lives, a more interesting and novel thought experiment might be to have us look at some of the more detrimental side effects. And this is exactly what's been covered in this piece by Jean Twenge, right? And mm. and she kind of says, she articulates rather, that the adolescents who have grown up in a world dominated by smartphones are more prone to a variety of mental health problems than adolescents from previous generations. Mm. She categorizes kids born between 95 and 2012
mm-hmm.
under a group she calls iGen. And the problem she's seeing in these kids who have never known a life without the internet, it transcends gender, it transcends class and ethnicity. It shows that a large proportion of this generation are more likely to commit suicide or experience depression than millennials.
Mm.
Here's a quote. It's not an exaggeration to describe iGen as being on the brink of the worst mental health crisis in decades. Much of this deterioration can be traced to their phones. So she writes that the connections smartphones provide are truly only surface level, and that as kids spend more and more time connecting with friends digitally, actual human interaction becomes markedly rarer. So one of the ironies of the iGen life is that despite spending far more time under the same roof as their parents,
mm-hmm.
today's teens can hardly be said to be closer to their mothers and fathers than their predecessors were. You know, kids are spending time with their families, but they don't talk to them.
Mm.
You know, yeah. It becomes one of those, can you help me out with the chores? Okay, whatever. That's the interaction that's, you know.
Yeah, and they're not asking the kids. They are sending a WhatsApp to the kids in the same house.
Yeah, yeah,
can
yeah.
you pick up the laundry outside, yeah. right?
But if you go and read this article, it's fascinating because it talks about how many of these kids from that particular generation, between 95 and 2012,
mm-hmm.
Have no interest in learning how to drive. They have no interest in leaving home. They have no interest in getting a job and supporting themselves. So these people are going to be stuck at home with no potential transport,
mm-hmm.
no way of work. I mean, this is not everybody, of course.
Yeah.
But the studies are showing that the trend is looking like this, and it's a ticking time bomb.
Yeah, like I think just before outside, I was asking, like, what are the travel patterns for this age bracket? Like, do they want to venture outside? Do they want to explore the world? Because I know people before that, they wanted to travel because that's the only way you get to see new things.
To see somewhere else.
Yeah, somewhere else. But now if you're connected to your phone and then you're looking at stuff through your phone or through Instagram, through the eyes of other people who are actually there or not there, like some of the stories that we've covered, then do you actually want to go there yourself and see these things? Or are you just going there to get Instagram pictures?
Right.
You know?
Right, yeah. And then you have the developments such as the HoloLens and those 3D and all, and you don't even have to go out and to travel anywhere. You just sit there and you can walk around your virtual space, and it's just as good as being there. I mean, what's troubling me is that they don't even show interest in actual social skills anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the big problem. I think that's what could be a big factor leading to the depression.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, or when I was kind of that age, 13, 14, 15, the one thing I wanted to do was get out of the house where my parents were and do something outside, you know, be away and be independent. And it's almost as if this generation is saying, like, well, independence is not something I'm really too keen on, mm-hmm. you know, because I'm quite happy where I am. I'm comfortable.
I mean, there's another thing to look at. I mean, to be fair to them, cost of living has gone up ridiculously over yep. the last like 10 years. And then yep. they also have, you also have younger parents, I think, nowadays. So they're not like traditional parents where, you know, you want to have that separation, I guess, for lack of a better word. But it's, they're sort of more friends than parents.
Interestingly enough, you say that, where you're saying we have younger parents. Mm-hmm. The trends are showing that people are getting married later and having children later as well.
From this group,
from this study, yeah.
Okay, so because connections, again, right? Yeah. They don't want to have like actual connections, or they don't have the opportunity to have connections.
Could be it.
I mean, living under their parents, I mean, even if they want to move out, rent is so expensive. Driving is expensive. Yeah. Maybe they rely on ride-hailing services.
I'm guessing so.
And buying a house is just, you know, pretty much out of the question.
Absolutely, right. Mm. Anyway, speaking about all things smartphone-related, we've got a story about an app coming up.
It's
an interesting one, though. Mm-hmm. If you have anything to contribute, please get us on WhatsApp, 01-8789-8899, or get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. We're going to take a short break. Some Nick Drake coming up right now on Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Barry fronts Motown, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, joined by
Arvind Yuvaraj
and Majid Hashim.
Okay, so this story then, Arvind. Now, just before you get to deliver the story, I mean, there have been times when I've been walking down the street and I've seen something, an animal, a creature, or whatever, and I'd love to know what it was, right? Yeah. Especially when I live here, right? What is that bug? Or what is that plant? Or what is that flower? Now I'm learning that this could soon be a possibility.
Oh yeah, it already is, actually.
It already is. I don't believe you.
So this thing is called iNaturalist. What they're doing
Called iNaturalist? What a horrible name!
It is. It's a super tacky name.
Yeah.
They could have gone for something better, I guess.
Right.
But straightforward. You know exactly what it is. Yeah. iNaturalist.
Yeah, I guess.
What they want to do is they want to help you identify animals that you see maybe on hikes or maybe when you travel or maybe when you see in the rainforest. You know, you see a weird looking frog and you want to know what it is.
Uh-huh.
So this app helps you identify it. It started out as an app that people uploaded photos to, and then the other users could help them identify what it was.
Okay.
So it's like a crowdsourced, community-based kind of a thing. What the team did, this team, it's led by a guy called Scott Lowry. He's from the California Academy of Sciences. So him and his team, what they did was they implemented it. They started to put AI and algorithms in the app. Mm-hmm. And then it started to teach the app using neural, machine learning and like neural networking to recognize these photos.
Oh.
Yeah. So it used a bunch of photos, 117,000 species identified using 5.3 million photos so far.
117,000 species.
Yeah, so they fed the system with 5.3 million photos, and the species was the system was able to identify 117,000 species, which is,
that's impressive.
Wow.
It's very impressive. They also said that this, like 10 years ago, this would have been something that people call impossible, but because of how good algorithms are now and how good machines are at recognizing photos, they are able to identify these animals quite accurately.
But I mean, we got to look at stuff like, let's say, for example, the ladybird, right? I know Southeast Asian ladybirds in particular have huge variances between the way in which they look. How would it distinguish between the two, though? You know, because some might have four or five spots, some might have seven or eight.
It says that it can recognize it even if it's from different angles. And so even if it has a few pictures of the ladybug, then it'll be able to differentiate which is which.
Oh.
So it even compares pictures. So even if it has, like, just say a dozen pictures of this ladybug and then it has a dozen pictures of the other, then it'll be able to tell the difference between ladybug A and ladybug B.
So it's kind of saying, is this it? Give it a thumbs up. Yes, it is.
Yeah. That's when it cannot identify for sure. So sometimes it's able to tell you for sure what the insect or the animal is. Other times it'll give you like a list of maybe 10 things that the animal might be.
So
it's like a list of probabilities. So it's like 80% that it's this kind of bug.
Mm-hmm. It might be this. Then maybe you can just like narrow it down.
This
or something.
Is great.
Yeah. So they say, of course, it's still a work in progress.
They've got to say that because we haven't identified all the species yet. So technically that's okay.
Funny you should say that because using this app, iNaturalist, there was a time when someone identified a new species. Like a couple of times this has happened.
Using
their network more. Like the app is new. But their network has been around since 2008, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
I love the idea of it. So iNaturalist isn't quite a biological version of Shazam just yet, but it's getting there, right?
It's getting there, yeah. So they started in 2008. It was a master's project for three students, and then it has since grown into like it has become like a community of 150,000 people. So 150,000 people are on this app. They are using it. They are helping to identify animals and pictures that are uploaded. There was a time in 2011 when someone uploaded a picture of a red and black frog, and then there was a frog expert. His name is Ted Kahn. He realized that it was a completely new species, and the both of them, like the guy who uploaded the photo and the expert, they published a paper describing the amphibian as a new species like a few years later.
Wow. Where
they confirmed it. There was another time in 2014. So there's a wildlife photographer. His name is Scott Tregese, I think. He uploaded a photo of a small snail that he took in Vietnam. Well, 20 months later, what happened was a snail expert, Jun Kit Foon, he identified the animal as a species that James Cook's crew had discovered in the 1700s, but there were no pictures of this snail.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Wow.
So he's seen the species like a long, long time ago. There is no documented evidence of the snail, but now they have documented evidence of the snail.
I did notice, though, that it did struggle with identifying human children.
Yeah.
They've been identified as northern leopard frogs or ringnet snakes. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I do know that there was an app in development a while ago for the identification of plants.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm guessing it would be iBotanist.
iBotanist.
Is probably what they'd call it.
iPlant.
But iPlant, yeah. I'd love the idea of it, though, you know. Something like this, just like a an encyclopedia, an interactive encyclopedia in my hand, I think is a great idea.
Yeah. I love how the previous story was about people being hooked onto their phones and not being able to go outside. And here we are talking about going outside.
We identify
going outside
our
with our phones.
Well, you know, the best of both worlds, as they say. As they say.
But one of the things is they say that it has to be, you have to be careful in using the app because with the app that you were talking about the plants, you know, stuff like mushrooms can be very dangerous.
Yes.
If you're not sure what kind of mushroom it is. The same goes for kinds of frogs. If it is a poisonous frog or if it is a venomous animal, then you need to know what it is exactly before handling it.
Right.
Snakes and spiders.
Ask your Sarawakian friends. They'll probably know. anyway,
Frida?
Frida! Anyway, we're going to take a very short break in a second. If you want to get in touch again, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. And of course, we are on Twitter at BFM Radio. When we come back, a new device that can heal with a single touch, even brain injuries in development. Right, up after the break here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites with me, Rich Bradbury.
Arvind Yuvaraj.
And Majida Hashim.
So we've had stories about iFlix having an injection of around 570 million ringgit. Fair chunk of change.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
We then moved on to smartphones and teens and about how it's affecting suicide rates and possibly creating a mental health crisis in teens. We then spoke about an app that could potentially identify, and what was it called? iNaturalist. Isn't naturalism when you walk around naked? Isn't that what naturalism is?
I think that's a different app.
It's a different app. Let's not talk about that app anyway. Okay, so this story I want to talk about now, I picked it up from USA Today, actually. And the headline is, new device can heal with a single touch and even repair brain injuries.
Wow.
Right? You read that and you're like, holy moly.
Mm.
After yesterday's story about nanoparticles and RNA and rejection of limbs and organs and one thing or another, this is one of those stories that it really interested me. So it's been developed by Ohio State University, and they are saying it can start healing organs in a fraction of a second. So the technology is known as tissue nanotransfection, short form TNT. It has the potential to save the lives of car crash victims, even deployed soldiers injured on site. It's a very small silicon chip that injects genetic code into skin cells, turning those skin cells into other types of cells required for treating diseased conditions, right? Mm-hmm. So in lab tests, one touch of TNT completely repaired the injured legs of mice over 3 weeks by turning skin cells into vascular cells. So blood vessel, blood carrying cells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it not only works in skin cells, it can restore any type of tissue. So there's this guy, Chandan Sen. He's the director of the Center for Regenerative Medicine and Cell-Based Therapies. So, for example, the technology restored brain function in a mouse who suffered a stroke by growing brain cells on its skin.
Mm-hmm.
It's breakthrough technology. You know, it's the first time cells have been reprogrammed in a live body. Current cell therapy methods are high risk, like those that introduce a virus, and include multiple steps. And a new study published in Nature Nanotechnology has pointed that out. So far, there are no known side effects to TNT, and the treatment is less than a second. So here's a quote. The technology does not require a laboratory or a hospital and can actually be executed in the field. It's less than 100 grams to carry and will have a long shelf life. So they are saying that TNT will be tested on humans within a year, and they are proposing the use of skin as an agricultural land where you can essentially grow any cell of interest. Just let that sink in.
Yeah, it almost sounds just too good to be true, doesn't it?
It's too good to be true.
Yeah. And you have like a Star Trek badge thing. And this
I'm quite sure it's taken from there. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, this is super sci-fi stuff. It doesn't sound like something...
This thing is like the size of a 20-cent coin.
Yeah.
You put it on your skin, a tiny electrical charge is emitted, zip, done. That's it.
So the treatment is 1 second. Less than a second. And then the healing takes about a few weeks.
Depending on this particular mouse, when it had got broke, if it got a broken leg with no blood flow going through this mouse's leg, they put this thing on its leg, allowed the charge to go through. 3 weeks later, the leg was perfectly fine.
Can you?
Right?
I know. This is like for medicine and all. It could heal a lot of people. But could you, like, just imagine if people use this for fight sports? Or for sports.
Sports injuries?
Yeah. I mean, sports injuries, it still comes under like the medical, like, you know, just like other people, so they have to heal. But imagine if they use it for like boxing or for like MMA.
Wow.
Yeah, if you get in there, how long would a match go for?
A while. Right?
This is borderlining on like exploitation, but then they could use this on people for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Right.
And all the right ones also, but you know.
But I mean, this is something I'm going to be following with interest. It's called TNT, tissue nanotransfection, folks. If you're interested, you know, check it out on the USA Today website. There's a whole bunch of stuff linked to it. Tissue nanotransfection. What a great world we're living in right now. Mm-hmm. Right?
What word was that again?
Don't do that to me. tissue nanotransfection.
Yeah, let's keep that in mind.
Oh, I hate him sometimes. right, we're going to take a short break. Some more music coming up. It is the modern age from the Strokes. It certainly is here on Enterprise BizBytes, BFM 89.9.
Be faithful, men. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes here on BFM 89.9. My name is Rich Bradbury.
Arvind Yuvaraj.
And Majida Hashim.
Majida Hashim, also known as an aviation sustainability specialist, right? We have a story now, just bigging you up a little bit, right? So this story that we picked up on this morning, pilotless planes could apparently save airlines $35 billion US dollars if anyone is willing to fly in them.
Yeah.
Explain this to me, Majida, because it's just, for me, it's a big drone in the sky.
Yeah, but would you fly a plane? Would you go onto a plane if you knew there was no pilot in it?
I'm currently wouldn't even get into a self-driving car right now, so let alone something that's flying as high as they do right now. Not yet. I think in the future, possibly, yes.
But Arvind, would you get into a pilotless plane?
I would. Depending on if they've perfected it or they say they've perfected it, then yeah, I would give it a chance.
Well, according to this article I found on pilotless planes, the technology is already available and they could be available to the market by 2025, which is just around the corner. Now, USB Investment Bank did a survey in June. They surveyed about 8,000 people around US, Europe, Australia, and they found out that just about 17% of people would be willing to go on the plane if there was no pilot. And even if they were offered cheaper tickets, less than half of the respondents said that they would still get onto the plane if there was no pilot.
I think the idea of having somebody control it for me is a little bit reassuring.
So a lot of people ask, is it even logical? Is it a feasible concept to have pilotless planes? The use of commercial and military drones, as you mentioned, already shows that the technology is available and it already is in regular use. The most common type of passenger aircraft in the world, which are made by planes by Boeing and Airbus, already rely heavily on computers to do much of the pilot's work.
Yeah.
This form of flight is known as fly-by-wire.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, auto-landing is just as conventional as autopilots, and they've been around for decades. And the new technology is where control towers is concerned. The actual physical control towers, according to this article, will be a thing of the past because you can navigate everything through GPS and it's electronic dashboard right now.
You see, there's things in that I know, but I don't want to accept, you know, automatic landing, automatic takeoff.
But it's really happening.
I know, don't remind me. Yeah. You know, I like to think that there is somebody entirely in control of that plane as it takes off and as it lands. And, it, you know, I know in my heart that it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
But I just like to believe the idea.
But
you know?
I mean, would you be more comfortable if you had like the mind of five people landing your plane instead of one?
That's a good point.
Zero disrespect to anyone who's a pilot who have done this. This is coming from someone who's afraid of heights. So what you do is it's far and beyond whatever. But machine learning, I mean, it sort of piles together like 5,000-6,000 people's mindsets. That's right. How it learns. It studies people.
But a machine cannot look in front of it and see a bird, you know, and immediately take action.
But you have instruments on the aircraft itself that can detect areas around it and can pick up birds. Not only that, it can pick up things like extreme weather, and it can see through fog, which humans cannot. Mm. In fact, a lot of the aircraft incidents right now is due to human factors. And there is a huge shortage of pilots around the world because of increased traffic movements. And there's so many stories of pilots flying tired, pilots who are intoxicated.
That's the airline's fault, though, we'd say, right? Mm-hmm.
But they are one of the biggest causes of aircraft incidents, human factors.
Let's turn that question around on its head then, Majida.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be happy to fly in one of these things?
I think right now, there is a collaboration between the aircraft and the human right now. Right now, there is a safety requirement that at least there has to be two humans in the cockpit at one time. But there can... The transition can happen, and it is happening.
Or
so you
no.
reduce one human
yes
first.
Yes or no?
I think I would.
Right.
I really think I would.
You were saying off air that you think it's a good idea, a potential good idea for freight.
For freight, yeah. I think where cargo is concerned, there is a lot of benefits that can come to it. You don't have you don't carry passengers then, so you will save a lot on transporting high-value goods. But also, there are a lot of other opportunities, such as deploying aid where disaster-struck areas are concerned. So sending food, aid, blankets, and things like that. So you don't need to carry passengers. Pilotless planes can send things there. You also can use pilotless plane for firefighting against forest fires and things like that, where you don't carry humans as precious cargo.
Right, we got to wrap up, folks. We're almost out of time. But very quickly, we'll quickly run through the stories that we've touched on today, and then we're going to remind you about what's happening this evening as well. So, Majida, that was great. Thank you very much for that.
Yep.
So, was the answer yes or no then?
I wasn't quite clear. I would go on
the
plane. Yeah.
All right, just wanted to check. Arvind, yes? Yes or
yes,
no?
I would. Actually,
I'm out on my own on a limb, on a wing and a prayer. All right, so we started off with that's from yesterday. We don't want that one. Today, you started
iFlix,
off with
iFlix. They've made $133 million in its latest funding round.
How smartphones are potentially causing a mental health crisis in teens.
Yeah, and then also how iNaturalist is an app that can help you identify animals when you go on hikes or in the rainforest.
We then talked about a new device that can heal with a single touch and even repair brain injuries. It is known as TNT, or tissue nanotransfection. Word of the day.
Yeah. Okay. That deserves applause.
And then, of course, we finished off with Majida. And
we spoke about pilotless planes, and that it is a technology that can be closer to you than you think.
Okay, so what do we got happening tonight?
Yeah, so tonight we still have a few spots left for the network series. It's called The Retail Landscape number 11. This is the one with, we have Pat Liu from British India. We also have Edmund Tan from Inside Scoop. Inside Scoop, of course, makes those delicious ice creams that you can get.
Yeah.
There might be a chance for you to sample some ice creams. I'm not saying anything, but there might be ice creams available.
There might well be.
Yeah, so tickets are at $63. You can get them from Eventbrite, or you can also go to bfm.my/network series. It's happening tonight. It starts at 6 and it should end about 9 to 9:30 in the night.
The Imaginarium at Wanatama.
At the Imaginarium at Wanatama.
Okay, finally, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, we've got Peter Bellew, the CEO of Malaysia Airlines, who was on the grill this morning with expectations of turning a profit soon and planned relisting on the board. He spoke about the status of Malaysia Airlines and if the national air carrier is on track to achieve its goals. That's all coming up after the news at 1. On behalf of myself, Rich Bradbury,
Arvind Yavaraj,
George.
And
Majidah Hashim.
We will be back tomorrow, same time, same place, on Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. In the meantime, it's the Stooges. No fun. See you later, people.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.